Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. This episode is a very special bonus episode with the lovely John Tovey, who is the drummer from the legendary London band Flowered Up. They were around at the same time as the Mondays, and they were often referred to in the press as London's answer to the Mondays, but there was no rivalry there, and the bands were actually really good friends. There were many parallels between the two bands, including each one having a dancer and two brothers in the lineups, as well as heroin also being a key player in their trajectories. In the case of Flowered Up, it led to the worst possible outcome. Both the lovely singer Liam Mayer and later his younger brother Joe died as a result of their addictions. Drummer John too fell victim to heroin addiction, but happily he's now well and still around to share his story and his own unique perspective of around those times. I'm really excited to introduce you to Mr. John Tovey.
When you get clean and sober, you go through all these mad things. You know, stop smoking, I can get your sex under control, drink fucking tea, coffee. You go on the mad health kick. So I've done it all. I've stopped eating meat, just fish, became a pescatarian.
Yeah.
Then I did that no caffeine thing. Jesus Christ. I phoned my ex-wife one day. I was about 4 days into it. I was like, fucking, I said, my head is absolutely banging.
Yeah.
I felt terrible. She was like, you're withdrawing. I was like, what are you on about withdrawing? She's like, you have a coffee and see what happens. I had a coffee and I was all right. Mental. So all I do is drink tea now. You was asking me about the comparisons with the Mondays and Flowered Up.
And then, do you remember when you first went to see the Mondays and what you thought?
I can't remember if it was the Forum, Kentish Town, or it was Manchester. But either way, the first time I saw them, it was amazing. I remember the Forum gig, but I remember the Manchester gig more. Four of us drove up there, and it was all done on a whim. It weren't planned. I was the only one who had a car. By the little bright yellow Mini Metro 1300 special. And that car was amazing. It was the rave mobile.
Seriously.
So there was myself, there was Anne-Marie, there was Arnold, there was Wakey, there was Jason Boone, Stephen Russell, Ginger. 9 times out of 10, he was there. You'd have Sunshine, which is Liam and Joe and Darren's half-brother, and then another fella called Andrew John. I would get all them in my Metro going to a rave. So I'd take the back parcel shelf out. We'd have two in the back. Now, Arnold can only sit in the front So he used to push the chair. His knees would be on tucking top of the window screen, up to here, all crunched up. It was mental, that little motor. But anyway, I was with my pal, my best mate, Paul Sexton, One Love Sexton. And I was in the band by this time. I went to Jeff Barrett's press office down in Atton Garden. And at that time, you know yourself, all record companies, they'd have white labels and they'd have all their albums and singles in there. So my first experience of going to Capersville was like, wicked, free records. So I remember getting their first album, Squirrel G-Man, like with Tart and Olive Oil and all that. What an album. In my opinion, it's the best album they ever did. That was, to me, that was the Mondays. Pills and Thrills and Belly Aches was great record, but it was made for a purpose and it did the purpose. It got on worldwide status. Oakenfold did what he had to do with that album. I like Bummed as well. I really did. Them first two albums were quality, but Pills and Thrills is a different level. It changed the band for the better, obviously, financially as well. So, yeah, we drove up to Manchester. As I say, it wasn't planned. Can't remember. I don't think we had fucking that much money between us. So we rolled up to Manchester, straight in, straight on the guest list. I was with my mate Sexton in the crowd, and I was just taking it all in.
Was this
G? This was the G-Mex.
Right. Oh, I was there.
That was the G-Mex, and I remember what stood out for me was up until this point, I hadn't met any of the Mondays. I hadn't met any of the Roses. I hadn't met any of them bands personally at this point. My first introduction to the Manchester scene was the Roses. If you were to ask me who's the better band, they're two different bands. Yeah. They both bring something to the party. They're both musically different people, like different kinds of personalities, but both camps are good camps. You know what I mean? I couldn't pick. When I first heard that first album by the Roses, it did blow me away. I think more so being a drummer, because Rennie's, he's just something else on that kit. But anyway, so we arrived in Manchester, got in, no aggravation. Off of the main hall there, they had like another room, which was for guests, VIPs and all that. But as me and my pal Sexton, One Love, walked into the VIP bit, as I'm walking in, Ian and John are walking towards me. Now, at this point, Flowered Up are only known by name. I don't even think the Roses and that were that much aware of what we were doing. And we had these fucking stupid hats made, like a bucket hat, but it was made out of felt. And it was orange and purple, the same colour as the flower, and it had epoxy flower on it. I remember having one of them on, like thinking no one's gonna know, like, but I had a handful, I had badges as well, so I was giving people badges. So as I've walked in, they're walking out. Now they don't know me, I don't know them, but I've introduced myself and I've not mugged myself off, gone like, I'm John from Flowered Up. I've just gone, you know what, I was like, nice to meet you. I was like, top tunes, top album, both really nice guys, but obviously they didn't know me then proper, so they've just gone off and done their own thing. And then as we were getting a drink, remember Candy Flip? Oh, Strawberry Fields Forever, fucking through the teapot. But end up meeting them. There was two of them in there, weren't in the band, weren't there?
I don't remember. What was it? What was the hit single they had?
Strawberry Fields Forever. I think the video is them singing through a teapot or something. It's all kind of trippy. Got chatting to the lead singer from Candy Flip. I'm not slagging him because I don't know the guy, but he was like, I'm the lead singer of Candy Flip. I was like, I know, because they were riding high in the charts with that, weren't they? They was on every radio station, every music station. So it was hard not to know who he was. Do you know what I mean? He didn't need to tell me, but I found it quite funny. Spent quite a bit of time just chatting about all sorts. He was a really nice guy. And 808 State came on. I liked them because they was something new and they're different. And they was doing that. It was the rave thing as well. I thought they was top class. I thought they were brilliant.
Yeah.
Their light show was amazing as well. I remember them being fucking on top form. And then the Mondays come on and that was just mental. It was mental. Just his bass line. Can't fit the song. Think it might be performance. But then it just comes. Yeah, I think his performance. But the way it comes in is baseline, and then Gaz just hits the drums and it's like fireworks going off. The gaff just was just like fucking rocking. It was mental. Yeah, it was proper good. I think Rowetta made an appearance that night on the stage. I just thought, yeah, this is like, this is something else. I hadn't been to gigs like that. Gigs that I'd been to prior to seeing the Roses and the Mondays was Springsteen at Wembley, Genesis at Wembley Stadium, this is, U2 at Wembley Stadium. I'd seen Dire Straits, I'd seen Eric Clapton. So to enter arenas and see bands like the Roses and the Mondays doing what they're doing, and like our generation just giving it everything and all, yeah, it was just, so yeah, it was good.
How old were you then at the GMEX gig?
It 19. I'd have been 19.
Right. When you were on the journey back to London the next day or whenever it was, what were you saying? What was being discussed?
When the gig finished, that's when it was said they're having a party in the hotel. They've booked the whole floor. And I can't remember why we didn't go and why we came back. We didn't hang about after. We just came straight back. On the way back, I think I just crashed out because it's a long old drive back to London.
Tell me about how that GMEX gig influenced you and the guys. Was it already set in stone what you were going to do?
Once I wouldn't use the word influence. We wanted to be part of that scene, but doing it our way. For me, it was about the energy. And don't get me wrong, what the tunes they were doing were like bang on tunes, but it was just more about that energy. That's what I wanted to create. My thinking was, if we can be fucking 10% of what they're doing, but in our own way, then we're onto something good. We were still at very early stages then, because I think by then I might have done my first gig. My first gig with the band was in a club called Land of Oz, what was set up by Oakenfold and an Indian guy called Ian St. Paul. And it was on a Monday night. It was down on Charing Cross Road. I think it's the back of heaven, somewhere like that. This club, it used to open at 10. The queue for this club used to go all the way down the back of Charing Cross Road, went all the way down and then all the way round to the embankment. The queue was mental for a Monday night. It was crazy. And still then, we only had 3 songs. For my first gig, I thought it was all right. As much as I didn't want to join the band, and I thought like there was a load of shit. Now I'm involved, so your kind of attitude change. I knew it was going to go somewhere. I knew something was going to happen.
Yeah.
The way things was panning out.
It's about timing and being in the right place at the right time with the right package. And that's what you jumped into, that zeitgeist, that thing that was going on. Tell me a bit about how you would differentiate yourselves from the Mondays. You obviously were your own entity, but what do you think were the subtle differences between the two bands?
Musically wise, if you put the Mondays records on and play ours, we don't sound nothing like them.
Right.
The only comparison is 5 guys in a band, got a dancer.
Probably the Barry Moon cult thing, isn't it, that made people jump to that conclusion, I would think. Because that was quite a rare thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. The only other person to be jumping around on stage with a flower prior to that was Peter Gabriel in Genesis. I'm just going to shut my window.
All right.
Prior to that, it was Peter Gabriel from Genesis jumping around on the stage with a flower. At first, it was more of a gimmick. It was only till we got to a point where we had enough songs where we could go on a bit of a tour. And obviously, the more we played, the better we got. The position we was in, we had to play catch up really quick because there was already this buzz about the band.
Yeah.
There was already the comparison of London's answer to the Mondays, which wasn't orchestrated by any of us from the band. Right. We never set out to be the answer to it. We never set out to be Mondays rip-offs. We were just 5 kids involved in the e-scene. We were just doing what they were doing up north. Right. And we just happened to be into the same kind of scene as in the drugs,
yeah,
and the music.
Yeah.
And we were just trying to do our own thing. There isn't one song that I could say yeah, that sounds like the Mondays, or that sounds like the Roses, or that sounds like the Farm. I think like the Farm, the Mondays, the Roses, ourself. I think we all have different music, but in the same mold. Does that make sense?
And I noticed this as well when Paul talked about other Manchester and Liverpool bands. Like, there was real love. It's like there was no kind of rivalry. There was no bitterness. There was no, it was like you were on the same side with this. Like, there was a big mutual respect thing going on, I think, between all of those bands. I remember when I first met Paul, I asked him what bands he was into, and he said, oh, I really like The Farm, you know, like, and like Manchester and Liverpool historically are massive rivals, but it was all very much supporting each other and liking each other and showing up at each other's gigs. And I think that's one thing that really struck me about
Totally. Our relationship is like when we eventually had enough songs, we went on our first little mini tour. We had about 7 or 8 songs. And we went out on this little mini tour, 3 gigs. So we went to Dundee in Scotland. We went to Manchester and we went to Liverpool. So the reason we went to Dundee was Scottish Jeff was from Dundee. And there was a little firm of Dundeeans. Is that a word? Dundeeans?
Oh, no.
There is now. There is now. I've made it. Dundeeans. So there's this little firm of Dundeeans down in London. There's about 5 or 6 of them. They're all living and working down in London. Where they're all from Dundee. They're all pals who left there and came down south. So anyway, there was a club called Fat Sam's in Dundee. So this was our first venture out of London. And we went up to Dundee and it was just... do you know what? Liam said about, like, we're doing this just to have a laugh. It was the best laugh I've ever had. Seriously, I didn't know about going on any kind of tour. The only kind of time I've been out is away games on football, but nothing like what I adventured. You know what I mean? In a tour bus, driving up the M1, fucking loads of drugs, loads of drink. You know what I mean? Not knowing what's in store. It was just mental. It was brilliant. We didn't play Manchester that time because there'd been a balls up with the venue and everything, so we didn't get to play Manchester. But what we did get to watch was Strange Ways Riots. We parked right outside the prison, watching them loons on the roof throwing tiles at everything and everyone. So we sat there and watched that for an hour or two, and then we made our way over to Liverpool, where we did the university, and that was just fantastic. But as time went on, wherever we played, if we played Manchester, like, few of the Mondays would turn up, or some of the Roses would turn up. Manny came to a gig or two. I remember meeting Bez for the first time personally when we did Manchester on our first tour. He turned up to the gig. And I'd already met a couple of the Farm members. And as you say, like what Paul said, there was no animosity. We're just normal guys out there making music, enjoying the fun of popping a pill or two or whatever, and just... yeah, just enjoying each other's company. It's like if you went up to Manchester, it's like you had people who knew people. We was always welcome, do you know what I mean? It's like the first time I went to the Hacienda, Kermit took me to the Hacienda. And then within the Hacienda, the Mondays had their own kind of corner.
Right.
So when I've gone into the club, I can't remember who was there because I ain't going to lie, I was off my tits. But Kermit was like, no, come over here. It's like they had their own sort of crowd and corner. So I remember a few of them being, I remember Bez being there, I remember Sean, can't remember if Paul was there. Mark wasn't really one of them people out, was he?
He was in a relationship and he wasn't really a big raver like that, no.
I remember Mark and Paul, and I think it was PD. But I don't know why they was in London, but we'd done the Underworld. And they came down that night. We played the Underworld, which, to be honest, it was a really good gig. It was in our hometown. It was in Camden. And the gaff was rocking. We had it really rocking. And then after the gig, I remember being in Mark and PD and Paul's company, just having a drink in the corner, having a chat and that. And that was probably one of the very first times that I'd been in their company, being able to talk. Because you know what it's like at gigs. Got their little family bit going on and they got their own little mates. So even though you're backstage and in their area, there's all shit going on because it's like they're going on stage. They've got their own thinking going on. There's drinks going around. But that night after the Underworld was all right because it's like we were just having a chat, just talking about what they were doing, where we was at, getting praise from them. Oh, that was good. Joe loved Mark Day's guitaring. Yeah. Joe just said, like, some of the guitar licks on their songs, he just said, like, it's just real simple stuff. I'm not saying, like, he influenced Joe, but Joe recognised his talent for simplistic guitaring. So there was all that stuff going on. It was just more admiration than trying to copy what they're doing or being influenced. We were just lucky to be, as you said, timing. We were just lucky. I think at the very start when Liam and Nat saw them might have triggered, because I wasn't there, so I can't say, but from when I first saw the Mondays at the G-Mex, I just thought, I want to be doing that. Not what they're doing, like not playing the music they're playing, not to say I don't like it because I loved it, not ripping them off, but doing that, being up on stage and watching this crowd just going mad for it. That's what I wanted to. That's what inspired me. That's what I want to do. Watching them guys, like the Roses and the Mondays, is like, no, that's what I want to be doing. Do you know what I mean? I want to be sitting on my drums because the drummer's got the best view. I don't care what anyone says. You're on a drum riser, aren't you? You're on a stage of 12, 6 foot, 7 foot high anyway. Then you're on a drum riser, which is about another 2 foot. So I can see right at the back. And you know what? As much as I say that, I can't ever remember sitting on the drums and looking at. I was so engrossed in what I was doing.
I was going to say.
Do you know what I mean? I was just.
Talk to me about the nerves, like the nervousness when you're doing a massive gig. How do you manage that nervousness? And do you ever just want to run away before you even start? Like, how bad do the nerves get?
I never had them. I'd already been in that band for a year or two. So I was used to playing. I never got stage fright. Obviously, stepping into the Flowered Up Arena, obviously it got bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here thinking, I was never nervous. I don't know if it's because I'd consumed a few beers beforehand. The only things that would bother me, and it wasn't nerves, we did a gig in Holloway Road at the Rocket. And we did the sound check, and the sound for me was really bad. Acoustics in the room was terrible. What was happening? We was playing, and the like, obviously sound waves, they was hitting the wall and bouncing back. So as we're playing, you're getting the music going out, but the music coming back, and that was not nerves. That was more struggling to It's like trying to play a drum beat with someone else playing a drum beat on top of you, but a different pace. So it was more of a struggle. That gig always sticks in my mind. But the worst thing I did on that night was to fucking snort a gram of coke before I went on stage. Now, talk about make things worse for yourself. Do you know what I mean? That's the worst thing to do because that speeds you up anyway. I'm having difficulty. But as nerves go, no, I was never really nervous. In fact, I used to let's just get on and do it. When they did the first gig, it's too long ago, but I don't remember being nervous, probably a bit apprehensive.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, shit, this is like, just things what go through your mind for me, just don't fucking drop the drumstick. Just don't drop a stick.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Was Liam nervous?
Yeah. I don't want to be cruel or unkind to other bands that are around at the time, but it's like the four main bands of that time for me was the Roses, the Mondays, the Roses, the Farm, and us. Well, that's how it felt.
Yeah.
You had other bands out there like My Bloody Valentine, and I mean Blur was out there at this point, even the Charlatans.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I don't ever remember, as much as the Charlatans I really like, and they're a big band, but they never seem to get lumped in with it. Just I don't know if it was the press thing, but it just, for me, it just felt like it was that four band thing. The Roses, the Mondays, the Farm, and us, for some reason. I don't know if that's me fucking dreaming that, but looking back at the press at the times, as I say, there was a few other bands, but I don't know, it just felt like it was us. What was your take of it, kind of, then? What, I mean, at that time, because you worked at MTV, so obviously you had... Yeah.
The whole of 1990, I was just there for 1 year, and the Mondays broke through that summer when I was in MTV. I don't know, I kind of have a warped perspective because I...
Oh, thanks for using that. That's the kind of word, I don't know if my thinking was a bit warped, a bit one-sided.
Within that scene, that was the basket of bands that were in that, like New Order are related, but they're not quite in that basket. But yeah, it'd be the Roses, the Mondays, the Farm, Flowered Up, and now I'm struggling to think of who else would be in it. So I guess what ties the four of those bands together are, with the exception of Rowetta, all male, all working class, all not coutured by the music industry, not like dressed up like Culture Club or Duran Duran, not styled in a kind of conventional record company styling. It was like the 90s version of punk, really, isn't it? It's like
it was, wasn't it?
Kids from the streets, kids from working class backgrounds that normally wouldn't have got record deals that suddenly had exposure, because none of those... Who were the Farm signed to?
No, there was... I think they got their own record company. Right. I think they did it all in-house.
So none of those four bands were initially signed to a major label, and I think that's what made it special.
That's where we went wrong. We signed, and I think the main reason we signed to a major is purely because we didn't have any money. It's like we were playing catch up. Like the name, the band was already out there, the hype was there, but there was nothing backing it up. The Mondays and that. Look how many years they was together before they got what they got.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They'd kind of done their apprenticeship. We was like jumping in with tradesmen. The Mondays, the Roses, the Farm even. They were tradesmen. They've been doing it. Like, they've been together. They were like a unit.
Yeah.
We've been doing it months. And like, what, you've only got six songs? We was under pressure from the get-go.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Oh. It was playing catch-up. That was the only downside of Flowered Up. It was a great idea. Timing was right. But the music just wasn't... Well, the quantity of songs, because the quality of our songs are pretty neat, I think. Yeah. I don't think we did a bad tune, to be fair.
Right.
But we were just playing catch up, and everything was rushed from there. We held our own. It was more inspiration to get where they got or get where they're going, because by the time we'd done our album, the Mondays was on their third, and obviously the Stone Roses had issues with their management, so they couldn't release anything or write anything.
Yeah.
So they were like stuck and static through fucking...
Who are the similarities between Flowered Up and the Mondays? Number one is two brothers in the band, the older brother being the lead singer.
Oh, yeah. Fucking hell, yeah.
Which has always struck me. How did Liam and Joe get on as brothers? Was there tension?
I don't remember many fights. I don't believe there was... punch-ups, there would be disagreements because they're brothers. Liam wasn't an aggressive or a nasty person. He was a lover, not a fighter, Liam. Yeah. Joe was a prima donna. I'll tell you what, It's horrible because, speaking of the dead, but in a lot of ways, Joe gives me the ump because he's a talented guitar player. He had his own style, but he was really lazy. And that's really frustrating, especially someone who's not like myself. I'm not a talented drummer. I could, the running joke in the band, they called me Two Beats, Two Beats, Two V. That was it. I could play a 16th beat and I could play a four, like a rock beat, 4x4. I'm not technically gifted. You know, I had to work hard. I can hold a beat and I can play along and I can fit into the band, but I'm not a wild, flairish drummer. I'm not all over the drum kit technically gifted.
Most people couldn't play the drums and be in a band. Like, even just being able to be in a band and pull that off means you've got some talent. Don't underestimate
it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can hold my own, but with Joe, it's like Paul. You listen to Paul's bass playing. Now, you can tell he's, like, talented. Some of the bass lines on their tunes are just, like, banging. His bass playing stands out on most of their tracks. When you listen to the bass lines are real funky bass lines. They're not poppy. They're bass lines from a good bass player. You can tell Paul musically in tune. Some of them bass lines on Squirrel G Man album, like Olive Oil and that, that's my favourite track, do you know what I mean?
A lot of people say Olive Oil, yeah.
I love it. I could play it and play it and play it. The production on it's just amazing. I'll rate that album. It definitely in my top 15 albums, without a doubt.
Yeah.
You said about being of the era of punk. We always used to call our sound Dunk, D-U-N-K, dance punk. That's what we was trying to achieve. We wanted people to dance to our indie music. When you say dance to like the Mondays or our tunes, it's like you ain't gonna be able to get your burden one hand here and on your. It ain't happening, is it? To get 10,000 mainly blokes in a crowd dancing to like indie music, you got to be doing something right, haven't you?
Yeah.
As well as enhancement from the substances that right. have to go with it.
Right. So that was the other thing that I was going to say. So the other thing that the two bands have in common were, I mean, like a kind of a prerequisite to the success is the influence of drug culture. I think without the drugs, there wouldn't have been that kind of music. But then ultimately,
it wouldn't have been that much hysteria, that's for sure.
Right.
It still might have happened, but it went hand in glove, didn't it?
But also, it was the demise of the Mondays definitely for a good few years and kind of never really totally recovered from that. And obviously your band as well. Drugs basically destroyed everything.
Yeah, but hold on. For the normal people listening to what we're talking about, when you talk about drugs, you've got to talk about drugs on different levels. Some people have a puff, fair dues. And then some people have a bit of sniff, fair dues. But then when you get into powders like heroin, and then when you get into washed up cocaine like crack, then you're on a completely different level. Now, I know firsthand it entered into the Mondays, and I know firsthand it entered into Flowered Up. Well, that's why the farm is still going strong and still got all their members alive and kicking.
Yeah.
We weren't that lucky. I know personally Sean had his issues with the gear as well, Paul, mm-hmm. and then you had us. So when you talk about drugs, it is the different level of drugs. I've got a book up there written by Anthony Donnelly.
Yeah.
what a lovely pair of brothers they are, mental. lovely guys. He makes a quote in his book. He reckons we were the kings of drug taking. He said he's never seen people take drugs like we did. That's nothing to be proud of. It's fucking sad, really. But that was the demise. When the heroin came into Flowered Up, that was the end of Flowered Up. That was the end. And the sad thing is, it came in very quick. It came in within the first 9 months of the band.
Where did it come
from? How do you make the transition? Is it that you think, because I get away with a puff, because I get away with the odd line here and there, I can get away with a bit of heroin? Like, what goes through your thought process?
The day I first took it, I never set out to take it. So where I grew up, King's Cross was rife. On the front line of King's Cross, it was rife with heroin addicts. And where we grew up, heroin was taboo. It was a drug you don't do. It was a drug you just don't go nowhere near. It's one of them drugs. If you go near it, it comes with all that stigma. You're a wrong'un. You're no good. So I had no intentions whatsoever. I never set out to take heroin. I was steering clear of that one. Up until I took it, my main thing was drinking, puffing, sniffing a bit of coke and dropping pills. It was brought into the band. It doesn't matter who brought it into the band because it is what it is. But I caught Liam at rehearsal one day in the toilet. I thought he was doing cocaine, if I'm honest. I went to have a piss and he's in the toilet being all cagey. And I was like, what are you doing? He was like, nothing. Through the door. We're talking through the door. I was like, kiss the line. Thought he had a bit of Charlie. And I was like, if you don't, I'll kick the door down. He was like, fucking behave yourself. And we're getting into a bit of an argument. I was like, what are you doing? Why are you being so fucking, like, I started to get a bit, like, pissed off with him. Anyway, he's opened the door and I've seen Tim Foyle. And I just looked at him. I went, you fucking, sorry to use this word. I went, you
beep.
I said, what are you doing? And then he was like, shh, you have to be quiet. I was like, nah, man. I was like, and I kind of switched on him. Do you know what I mean? It's like, for one, he's my mate. For two, I know what this shit does to people. I've seen it. I see it daily where I live. Mm-hmm. So I was really pissed off. But it's mental. As much as it annoyed me, I went back into the rehearsal room and I sat behind the drum kit and all I could fucking think about was, I wonder what it's like. Do you know what I mean? It does. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's like, it's dirty, it's wrong, it's everything you don't do. And then I just couldn't get that thought out of my head. And I called him to, I said, outside, called him to one side. I said, like, I want to have a bit. And he was like, no. I was like, listen, I was like, you can't bring that into the band. I was like, all I can think about is like, what's it like? And is the worst thing I could have ever done. It's, oh man, how do you put this into words without glorifying? Because I don't want to glorify it. Everything they say about taking heroin is true. That's why you need to stay away from it. It does everything other drugs can't do. It made me feel warm. It made me feel confident. It made me feel relaxed. I was just in a bubble. Any kind of stress, pressure, anxiety, it just took all that away. It just, on a different level, that I've, no other drug that I've took in my life has done what that did. But it's what it does after. That's the killer. I was with this girl called Anne Marie. She's the best person I've ever met. Me and her were compatible on every level. She was gorgeous, kind. She was Irish through and through. She would have done anything for me. She loved me. She was in love with me. I was in love with her. We was engaged. Took that gear. I took the tiniest amount. You couldn't even believe. No bigger than what's the fag ash on the top of my roll up. It was that minute. And I snorted it. Liam was smoking it on foil. He said, no, just snort it. So I snorted a tiny amount. And what that did to me was unreal. But it was after, I mean, the buzz lasted for quite a few hours. But it was the next day. Soon I woke up from sleep and all I could think about was, I want to do that again. I want that feeling again. Seriously. And I just couldn't get that thought out of my head. I knew you could get it down King's Cross, but I didn't know who to go to. I didn't know what I was doing, what I was buying. I just knew I wanted to do it again. I drove round to Liam's. I said to him, like, I want to have a go. I want to do that again. And he was like, I ain't got none. I didn't know if he did or he didn't. He said he didn't have none.
How long have you been doing it at this point? Do you know?
He'd been dabbling. I can't remember what was said. It hadn't been long and he wasn't using every day. It was just now and then. Oh, yeah, because that's what I said to him. I said, like, how long have you been doing this? He said, oh, he said, I've been dabbling. He said, I had it years ago with one of our mates when I was about 15, 16. I was like, okay. I said, who did you get that off? He said, I got it off one someone else who was in the band. I was like, oh, right. But at the time, apart from going to King's Cross and you'd have got anything. You could have got fucking brick dust. You just didn't know what you was doing down there. You're dealing with like the lowest of the low. Mm-hmm. And obviously at that point, I'm still wearing nice clothes. I've got, you know what I mean? I'm not a junkie looker. I don't look like a junkie at all. So I'm going to get ripped off. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I go round to Liam. He didn't have any anyway, but it was that constant thought. And all I wanted to do was fucking, so I'm on a mission now. So I know there's certain people I know who have took it, and I know there's certain people in the area that can get it. So now I'm fucking pulling up on people going, can you get heroin? And they're looking at me going, fuck off. And I'm like, I know you can get it. And then next thing, like, I get pulled up by Liam, and he's like, John, he's like, you can't be asking like people for gear. He's like, they're coming to me because that's how taboo it is. It's a real underground kind of. I end up getting some over Summerstown and I do it again and I do it on my own this time. And then before I knew it, my relationship with this girl has just gone. I know in my heart, I can't tell her because of the stigma. It's like shameful. Mm-hmm. She's going to fucking hit the root. So I just detach myself. I already know where I'm going just by my thinking. Do you know what I mean? Just from that using. And before I knew it, it wasn't long. I was using every other day. And then before I knew it, a few months down the road, it took a little while. Woke up one morning and I just didn't have a clue what was going. I was what they call clucking. I was withdrawing. And I was just like, what the fuck? This is now I've entered. I'm on a completely different level of it now. Yeah. And I phone up the manager and I go, listen, I was like, my legs are like jumping like mad. I'm sweating. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? He's like, you're withdrawing. I was like, well, you need to get some money here and you need to fucking get me sorted. And that was it. And that was it for myself, Liam, and someone else in the band. Liam's passed, so it can be said.
What about Joe? Wasn't Joe into it as well?
No, I don't know if Joe got into it while he was in the band. I don't even know whether I was sacked or I left because, in my eyes, I went to Tenerife to get my head together. While I was in Tenerife, the then manager told the band that I had left. So when I got back, I was replaced by a geezer called Andy Island. So that was me finished from flowered up. And then that's a completely different story because my life just goes fucking chaotic from there after that. That's another podcast in itself. We'll do that one for the fans later. They'll enjoy that.
Yeah, we need to talk about when you rejoined the band again in 2005, but we'll talk about that another time.
Everything about them people, myself, when I'm at it, there's only one thing in my mind when I'm on that shit. And it ain't to be a nice and kind person. It's about what I can get from me, not you, from me. And it's about, I want to be around you because I want to get something from you. You're not getting nothing from me, but I want something from you. And it generally involves the queen's head or the king's head on it. Because that's the drug it is. It just makes you a nasty, greedy, selfish, self-indulgent, unlikable person. And that's why it's so taboo. But anyway, you spoke about it, you and Paul, so you know it. You know what I'm saying is true. But thankfully, it ain't like that for me today. Thankfully.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to just make that clear that you did end up coming back?
Yes. So basically, in 2001, after many attempts at rehabs and treatment, I went off to treatment in 18th of October 2001 to Diana Princess of Wales Treatment Centre, where I completed primary and secondary. and I've got 16 years clean and sober. Anybody who don't understand what clean and sober means, that means no drinking, no puffing, no sniffing, no booting, chasing, nothing, no drugs whatsoever. Sadly, 2018, I relapsed after 16 years and I was back out there. The term we use back out there means using. I ended up falling off the wagon. People might understand that more. I fell off the wagon for 3 years and it was a tough 3 years. It cost me a lot. Cost me a relationship with my wife, now my ex-wife. Cost me a relationship with my children, which is still strained, even though I do speak to them. Cost me my home. But thankfully, having good family and good family members, I was invited back into the fold. I got the help I needed, thanks to a good key worker, Martin Dickinson, who's a good friend of mine now. A bit of medication and a bit of loving and caring for myself again. I'm doing all right. And it's going good. I'm no longer doing what I was doing 5 or 6 years ago.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It's tough, but it's all right. It's better than fucking, it's better than using.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations. That's a massive achievement. And I think it's probably, you can tell me, is it harder the second time round to get clean than it was the first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first time from 1994 to 2001, I was constantly fucking trying to get clean. I'd have periods where I'd fucking hate being on the gear. You know what I mean? I'd hate what it'd done to me. And then I'd have moments where I'd be in love with it again. Like, you know what? I'm happy being a junkie. So it was that roller coaster ride for a long time. A couple of times I went to treatment. It's like I went to treatment for my nan. And then I went for my mum and dad. And then it, when you're doing it for other people, it doesn't work. You get clean when you and that person decides, you know what, enough is enough. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired is a word they use in rooms that we frequent. And they're not self-help groups. They're fucking, they're good places to go. There's help out there when people need it. I'm going to say it. AA and ACA, the 12-Step Fellowship, they're out there, man. There's people doing it and there's people there to help. So in 2001, after coming out of jail, I was just like, I'm not doing this no more. Yeah. You know, by this time, I've got 3 kids. And it's just like, nah, I've had enough. And as I say, I ended up getting 16 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah. It's all good. It's all good in the hood. We'll put it this way. If I was using, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing with you now.
No.
I couldn't do it. And I wouldn't be looking this beautiful at 53 if I was still at it.
Very good. Very good.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So tell me what your plans are now as a clean and sober person with a fresh start. What's on your agenda now?
I'm in the process of sorting out some stuff with what's gone on recently with the band. I'm in the process of trying to sort that out. I'm in the process of trying to acquire some accommodation for myself, like my own accommodation. I moved out of London. So kind of life is all right. I needed to take it easy for a little while. After that relapse, was it hard the second time round? It did mess with me mentally. It left me with real bad depression. That's something I never experienced before. That's a tough one, you know, that mental illness and that depression and anxiety and stuff like that. That's a completely different ball game. I'm not one to tell you what to do. It's like, unless I've got an experience with a situation, then I kind of give my two pence worth. But if I don't have any experience with something, I'm not one of these people to say, yeah, you need to do this or you need to do that, because who am I to say? Because I've not had that experience. So experiencing depressed, when you hear people like about depression and all that, till you've gone at it or experienced it, it was a difficult period for me. It just wiped me out. You know, just like some days it just left me crippled in bed. It left me with like real mad headaches. So I had to take some time out, still have counselling. I still go and see my key worker. I've had to battle through that. And so it was like once I'd put the drugs down, that's kind of the depression, which I never had when I was using before.
There's so much more for you to say. Are you up for doing a live stream maybe as well? I'll make a bonus episode. But you know, like those things you said, we did one with Phil Sachs and we did one with Gaz Whelan, where we get like a hand-picked group of fans to come and they ask you questions on the call. Are you up for doing that?
That's not a problem. I'd love to do it.
Yeah, all right, let's
do it. Yeah, I'd love to do it.
That'd be good, because obviously you've no issues talking. You're not shy, are you? Really, really compelling and like very honest and moving and all those things that make something really, really gripping. So thank you. And thanks for being so vulnerable as well. Really appreciate it.
No, man, it's cool. I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking to you. It's nice.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much. Cool. I'll be in touch really soon. Lots of love.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
See you soon.
All right.
That's all we got for you this week. He was brilliant, wasn't he? Oh, we're going to talk to him again, but this time on a Zoom call for all of our patrons. Patrons, check your emails for the details. If you would like to become a patron and have first dibs on getting on the Zoom calls with some of our guests, we've got quite a few coming up, go to patreon.com/ The Paul Ryder Tapes to join up. We would love to have you. We are big arming it up again this week with the first ever Big Arm single, Flashbacks. The video, for those of you who are watching it on video, was shot by me and the kids in New York in about 2005 and was edited by the legendary Kate Dimmock. We're going to be back again next week, same time, same place, with another episode. And as usual, if you would like to see the video version of this episode, it's going to be premiering next Sunday at 8 PM UK time on YouTube. That is Sunday, May the 5th, I think it is. Yes. Please do me a favour and hit the subscribe button so that you're going to be the first to hear about new content that drops. Check out the website at paulryder.tv for links to the socials and the shop. Have a fantastic week, everybody. Big thanks to all of you for being here. Special thanks, of course, goes to the fabulous John Tovey for being so entertaining and so open and vulnerable. And of course, big thanks and love, as usual, to the man himself for inspiring this, the legend that is the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder. So
Listening Productions.